Welkom bij Station Kiev, de Oost-Europa-podcast van kennisplatform Raam en Haags College. Van de repressie vanuit Moskou en Minsk tot de vrijheidsstrijd in Tbilisi en natuurlijk Kiev. We nemen je mee naar de verhalen achter de headlines. En deze keer praten we hierbij over het protest tegen Poetin door de Pussy Riots en over de ultieme prijs die sommige Russische bandleden daarvoor betalen, namelijk hun leven in ballingschap. Ik ben Stefan de Vries en ik val in voor Thomas van Zijl, de vaste host van deze show. Maar gelukkig, de vaste co-host is er wel bij, voormalig Rusland-correspondent, schrijver en oprichter van kennisplatform Raam, Hubert Smeets. Leuk dat ik deze podcast vandaag met jou mag maken.
Insgelijks. En bovendien is dit een hele speciale editie. Ja. Deze korte reeks.
Ja,
toch?
Ja, de vorige was ook al speciaal, want die was bij jou thuis. Daar was ik niet bij. Ik woon om de hoek. We zijn bijna buren. Maar dit keer is misschien nog wel specialer, want we zijn in Den Haag. In het pand ook waar de redactie van Station Kiev is gevestigd. Een paar verdiepingen hierboven. In poppodium Paard met publiek. Laat even van jullie horen. Ja, naast ons op het podium de gast die vandaag echt deze uitzending echt speciaal maakt. En dat is Maria Aljochina. Zij is artiest, auteur, activist, de AAA. Ze vecht al bijna 15 jaar tegen Poetins repressieve regime. Eigenlijk een voorloper van ons allemaal, bijna ons allemaal. Dat doet ze onder andere met de Pussy Riots. Daar is ze mede oprichter van. En vanavond speelt ze later hier in poppodium Paard.
Ja, dat zal in het Russisch zijn, in het Paard. Maar vandaag spreken we in het Engels met Aljochina. Want dat is de taal die ze ook beheerst en die wij hier allemaal ook min of meer verstaan.
Ja, dus nou, welkom Maria. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've been to the Netherlands a couple of times. Did you learn some Dutch words?
No.
No.
Yet.
Honest answer, no, but you can teach me some words.
Okay, I don't speak Russian, so maybe we can teach each other something.
You know a lot of Dutch words. If you have ever sailed on the boat, the language in the Russian maritime language is Dutch. Mast, verplicht, kajuit, bakboord, stoerboord, rugzak.
Rugzak?
Yeah.
Well, Dutch or not, you use words to express your anger towards Putin's anti-democratic policies. You were actually quite avant-garde by resisting to Putin while we were still addicted to his cheap gas and drinking beers with them at the Olympic Games. You were already fighting him. I will ask you a bit about all those feelings. But first, I want to go back to the moment that the Pussy Riots got world famous. That was already 13 years ago in 2012. Mm-hmm. You sang an anti-Putin song in the biggest church in Moscow, Mother of God, Chase Putin Away, was it called? Let's watch and listen that moment. Yeah, for all our listeners at home, we see members of Pussy Riots in the church in colorful dresses with balaclavas over their heads, dancing, jumping and praying. Tell me, Maria, what feelings do you have when you see this again? And which feelings did you have at the very moment, 13 years ago?
So that was just 2 weeks before the presidential elections, so-called elections, which were falsified. And that was a moment when the whole Russia was, there were a lot of people who were protesting against Vladimir Putin's next presidency. And we used, we came to the church because Patriarch Kirill used this particular church and the church as institution for the promotion of Putin's presidency. So Patriarch Kirill is an ex-KGB agent who had the huge tobacco business. And then he changed the dress, became a patriarch, started to promote Vladimir Putin. He said that Vladimir Putin is the miracle for our country, that he's saint. And yeah, that's it. So this church was used for private parties. It has a lot of elite shops inside, and it's all exist without taxes. Any person can rent a venue on the bottom level of this church. any person with all the equipment, all the smoke machines, sound machines, visual, etc. So we just made a very sarcastic comment about that. We didn't expect criminal case, but they opened the criminal case. And we... That was 21st of February, 2012. 24 hours later, police came to my apartment when I was taking my 5-year-old son from the kindergarten. And somehow I managed to brainwash him and say that I will come to you next day. I don't know anything about the church. And ran away. We were hiding like in the movie. And 7 days after, we've been caught. The only thing we didn't want to do, we didn't want to leave the country. And there were a lot of, you know, people saying that for this moment of elections, you should leave. We decided to stay, and I've been arrested 8 months later, imprisoned for 2 years and sent to penal colony. We have a post-Gulag system. It's a network of labor camps. So from in the moment when you receive the sentence, you are transported from the jail to the labor camp. It's a place divided into two parts. Looks like a strange village. A living zone and working zone. Living zone is a barracks. 100 women live together in one room.
How much?
100.
In one room?
In one room. One large room, yes. Two toilets, no hot water, one fridge, bath, like in the cinema about Gulag, because it's basically the same buildings. And the working zone, it's a fabric, so it's very cynical. Prisoners should work 6 days a week, 12 hours per day, salary, €3 per month, legal slavery. And they saw police uniform and uniform for Russian army. So all this shit is made by prisoners, mostly. My penal colony was in Ural Mountains. It's, how to explain it? It's between Moscow and Siberia. So it's basically a chain of the mountains in the middle of Russia. I was transported to the north part of these mountains. And it's quite cold there. It's kind of minus 35, sometimes more. And I started to complain about the clothes which they provide to women, because women were complaining, and I said it to Human Rights Commission, and then they put me to solitary confinement for 5 months, and I started to fight with them in the court with my lawyer, and we won somehow 3 cases out of 4. So this colony, this camp, they've been punished from Moscow, and they asked the permission to transport me to another penal colony. So I've been released 2 months before the end of the term, because Putin wrote a special VIP amnesty for us, because European politicians were asking about us all the time, like, how is Putin right? Why girls are imprisoned? Khodorkovsky, Russian oligarch, who received 10 years for building the opposition, and the group of ecology activists who occupied the huge boat.
Yeah, Arctic Sunrise. With some Dutch equipage.
Yeah, they also been released. And that's how we decided to go to Olympic Games, which you mentioned. We've been released in the very end of December, almost in the new year. And Olympic Games were held in February, so we decided to go and make an action there.
What did you do there, exactly?
We wrote a song, yeah. Putin Will Teach You How to Love the Motherland. And we came there, and I never saw so much police in Russia, so many police in Russia in different clothes. And we've been beaten first time there by Cossacks, which are, you know, I don't know how to describe this group of people, but yeah, we've been beaten there. And that was quite, you know, quite clear welcome from so-called freedom where we ended up.
Yeah. But your time in prison didn't stop you from continuing your fight. Would you say your time in a labor camp made you less or more fierce?
For me, it was a useful experience.
In what way was it useful?
In all the ways. I mean...
Because you lost almost 2 years of your life, right?
I didn't lose them. I was learning.
Okay. But that's a very tough university.
Special university, yes.
You never regret the action in the...
No.
In the church, because it was not an ordinary church. It was the St. Peter's Cathedral of Russia.
This is not a church. And what they are doing is nothing about Christianity. They're putting the saint water literally to Russian missile attacks now. They are calling to bomb hospitals from the altars, from the altar space. And I mean, just listen to Patriarch, what he's saying himself. It's nothing about Christianity. It's just one of the branches of FSB, which is effectively used because Russian people consider themselves as Christians, and it works sometimes better than TV. Yeah. We have different prisons. We have people with conscience. And when the war started, there were about 200 priests who signed the letter against this war and called for peace in Ukraine. They opened the criminal cases against them. They kicked them out from the country and imprisoned. These are real Christians, for my opinion.
After being released, or after you graduated from this, you made this song, Putin Will Teach You How to Love the Motherland. We have a clip of that. Let's have a look. This is at Sochi, right?
Yeah.
Where our king had beers with Vladimir Putin.
It was very, let's say, comfortable, you know, to have so-called negotiations with Putin. And he was that time trying to save his face in front of the West. That was like an official line of his politics, to say that we are democratic, we are good, there are no political prisoners, Crimea always wanted to be Russian, there are Nazis in Maidan, and it was kind of, you know, comfortable to believe that, and they are quite good at managing, you know, to put their people in everywhere in Europe, in politics, in organizations. Many people were listening for, like, Russian propaganda for many years. And, for example, Russia Today been blocked only in 2022. Mm-hmm. Again, better than never. And, well, after Sochi happened, they annexed Crimea. Then they started to beat us constantly in the country. So it wasn't the only episode when we've been beaten. Next, in March, that was more brutal. Doctors were cutting my head afterwards, after the huge metal can just was thrown into my head. And nobody been persecuted for that. Nobody. So they started to sponsor the young Nazi groups which were attacking oppositioners on the streets and on the oppositional rallies. And then in 2015 they killed Nemtsov. Then step by step they were taking the freedoms out from the people. They banned mass demonstrations, so it was completely impossible to have the mass demonstration legally. And for illegal demonstration, you can receive up to 8 years. And they chose people, imprisoned them with very loud coverage. So that provided the atmosphere of fear, and it works. Then they poisoned. They started this like poisoning chain. They poisoned our member Petr Verzilov. They poisoned Vladimir Karamurza, who been currently exchanged and ended up in this like airplane of freedom. They poisoned Alexei Navalny. Then pandemic starts, and then they use the pandemic to shut down even the single demonstrations. And single demonstration, I can explain what a single demonstration. So if they ban the mass demonstration, you still have the possibility to have the single demonstration, to draw your small poster in Moscow and to hold this poster, but alone. So when they opened the criminal case in 2019, there was completely unique picture. It was a person holding the poster and a huge line of several hundred people waiting to hold the same poster. Yeah, it's funny, but it's not funny. And then in 2020, they banned even this. They banned the single demonstrations. And then Navalny decided to come back home after he'd been poisoned and transported to Charité Clinic in Berlin. And there was the last attempt of people to, you know, to do something for his freedom and for the freedom of political prisoners, which we had a lot that time. So we went to the streets. I received second criminal case. This thing appeared in my leg. I was put in house arrest.
What is it?
It's my electronic handkerchief, which I perform now. So they put me to house arrest, like the strict, super strict house arrest when you cannot go out even for, I don't know, throwing the garbage. At the same time, they start to arrest me and other members of the collective just randomly on the street and put to detention center for 15 days. Mm-hmm. Then when you released, they were already waiting you by the gate, drive you to police station, sign another 15 days, and you drive back to detention centers.
Kind of change.
Carousel. We call it carousel. Mm-hmm. So the danger of carousel is that you, in one moment, you can't not go out from detention center because they will open criminal case when you're inside. And you will be transported from detention center to the criminal jail.
How did you perceive that when you was subject to that punishment? As repression only in Russia or already as a build up for a war against Ukraine? Because you stayed in Russia.
Yeah,
you were glad that Navalny came back, I think.
I didn't want to leave. That was like my nightmare to leave.
Why?
And because it's my country. I mean, it's very, I think, obvious. If you fight for 10 years for your country, like, what you will feel if you have to leave it. But, so, when the war started, I spent, like, four times on this, like, 15 days arrest with electronic handcuffs. So I was like house arrest, jail. They were arresting me for nothing. I didn't hold any posters, didn't do anything, just for being myself. So first months of the war I spent in detention center, and I just understood that I want to help Ukraine. And this is what I can do with concerts. This is like logical, rational decision, but my heart didn't work. So all my escape was very dramatic.
Yeah. That was the year 2022, 10 years already after your protests at the church. Then Putin gave an alarmist speech in February, ordering a special military operation, basically declaring war, although that war is forbidden. Let's have a listen to his speech at the time.
Мною принято решение о проведении специальной военной операции.
Do you remember where you were at the time when you heard these words?
There was a big speech on 21st of February, and that was like the dangerous one because he mentioned how many minutes the missile goes from Kyiv to Moscow, which from his mouth means from Moscow to Kyiv. That already means the war. I was in detention center in the cell.
Number at seven. That Monday?
Yeah, in yes.
21st.
21st. And there was a day of our Avopan prayer. 10 years just after. Yeah. I was in the cell and I was released 2 days after. And this I've heard already from the apartment. And I've seen... we all were watching online this first day of the war. What I felt, I think shock. Everyone was shocked. People could not do anything, could not work, could not eat. Everyone was crying. You just freeze. You cannot move. You cannot speak. You cannot just, you cannot make, like, give your feelings a space to be, because it's a shock. And I was going to Kyiv every year, and it's something unbelievable, something which you cannot describe. And 2 days after, they arrest me again for 15 and 15.
And then you decided to change, to leave your country, to flee. After all, even if you wanted to stay, what was the real turning point for you to go away?
Okay, it will be a complicated story. And you will see how crazy I am. I had an electronic anki. So I had 42 days until the end of the criminal case. If you do something with the anki, they put you to jail, but for 21 days. So I decided to cut it, throw it away. I went to my like inspector, this person who is responsible, you know, of my persecution, and said, like, can you just imprison me for 21 days? You will be done with your criminal case. I will be done with the criminal case. I will go to the tour to support Ukraine. You will save your like position. Everyone, she said, like, there is a bureaucracy. We cannot do it like right now. And I said, like, I will leave. I mean, I have the tour. I want to support the country, which I believe in. And I'll do it anyway. And she put me the second electronic anki and just started to, I don't know, check more often. I had a quote after I visit her, which supposed to change my house arrest into prison. I found out that they are not going to give back my documents because they took my documents. I was waiting and waiting and just deciding and deciding, and it was very hard. And in the end of the story, I just didn't go to this court. Didn't go there. I ended up in the apartment, which was surrounded by political police, 5 cars. And somehow I had to leave this apartment. So I used the delivery service, food courier, green uniform.
We have a photo of you, like somebody from another planet, in this bright green uniform. You're carrying a square backpack.
This was not me.
This is not you.
No.
But you were like this, right?
This is my girlfriend that time who left for me this costume.
Okay.
Her name is Lucy.
Okay. And then you took this costume.
I took this costume and I have a photo with it, but sometimes people are mixing us up.
Okay.
It happens.
The costume is right. How did you manage to get away? Because, well, it's hard to recognize somebody, but it sounds like a scene from a movie. How did it work out? How did you get out of the country then?
Several things. Well, you want the whole thing?
Of course, we want how you got here. Actually,
well, first you should leave the apartment,
yep,
which is surrounded by police. So you should like dress other way. You should leave your phone, because your phone is basically your tracker, because they are following you with the phone. So you should change the phone, change clothes. Without my friends, I think it all would not be possible. They found the car. The car brought me to Belarus. I tried first time in the first border. It was horrible because I was captured by KGB. And he was like interrogating me for 5 hours. But somehow he decided to let me go.
Why? Did you know that? All right.
I have no idea, because he did not...
Did he realize that were you?
I don't know.
No? You don't know.
I think they wanted somehow to me to try to cross the border illegally. And then you can to go by forest. And then they can catch me and just send me back.
Yeah.
I don't know the reason. But, I mean, then I tried second time, also didn't work. And then Iceland helped me. They gave me like magic document. And I pretended in the third border that I'm Icelandic dramatic actress who lost all the documents and need to go to the rehearsal, to the theater right now, and I'm super sorry, and I will like pay all the fines and la la, and they believed somehow. I don't know, they didn't check me.
That means that you were a good actress, so the story was more or less true. Since then you've been living in exile like many famous Russian artists before you in history. How have you been experiencing this exile situation since 3 years now?
I didn't reflect about it, but I think I never... So officially, it's more than a million Russians left only since the beginning of full-scale war. But I should say that people were leaving since 2014. I've seen famous, less famous oppositioners who were leaving because they understood that they will end up in prison or they will just burn out from the inside. I was witnessing all these people leaving, and it's very hard to watch it, because like you see people who were and who still are doing very important things, like Russian independent journalists,
mm-hmm,
who provide the only different picture, and now they are working from abroad. So it's hard. But if you look to the like to the European situation, to American situation, the whole Western situation with the growing of ultra-right movements, more and more voices for right-wing political parties, Trump is in power. So I'm thinking about it in the combination. I found that it's just a beginning of another time. And
you mean this is what happened in Russia could happen in Europe? Is that what you're saying?
Parts of what happened in Russia definitely can happen in Europe. Why not? Russia is not a special place. Yes, we have very tragic history. Russia been under Soviet Union for a century before it was under the Tsarist regime, so we never had democracy. We had it like officially for 10 years. But if you remember 90s, you remember two Chechen wars.
Yes.
And, you know, to have a democracy with a constant bombing of one of the regions of your country is not a democracy. Something different. So, yeah, I see it as a time change and probably a challenge for a people who believe in democracy and who believe in freedom.
May I take one step back in history? You was abroad, and there was one man, at least, who couldn't escape Russia. Alexei Navalny, because he was in prison. And suddenly, he died.
He was killed.
He was killed.
Mm-hmm.
What was you feeling at that time when you learned that he was killed in prison? Was all your hope gone, or you had expected it?
The murder of Navalny is a very clear sign that there is no public protection to any political prisoner anymore. They killed the most famous one, the most bright one. So after that, anyone can be killed there, any moment, in any number. That's what I felt. And
nobody is safe anymore in Russia.
Nobody is protected by public attention anymore. Because what we are doing, all of us, people who are now here, we're speaking about the people who are imprisoned for their anti-war position and anti-Putin position. And somehow, in many cases, when this name, you know, is known here, when people are writing letters to prisons, when this names appeared in the newspapers, it gives some protection. I mean, somehow it helps. But the murder of Navalny means that there will be more murders. And, well, I was crying. I mean, if you kind of asking about emotions, definitely I was crying. I was endlessly watching the videos, how people were bringing flowers to the Solovetsky stone, which is a stone in the front of Lubyanka dedicated to all the political repressed and killed people from Solovetsky Island. And each night, police were just bringing off these flowers, put them to the garbage bags and throw them. And each next morning, flowers appeared again. And you've seen the funeral. So these people were risking. They're risking everything because, like, there are CCTVs around all Moscow, and they can open a criminal case against each of this person, and they all were going there. I mean, this is the country I knew and love.
Yeah.
You're not in Russia anymore, but your fight against the regime continues. What can you still do while being in exile?
We can share our story. That's what we are doing via Riot Days concert. It's not a classical concert, you know, with a list of songs. It's a story on the stage. Based on two of my books. We tell this story and maybe it can be somehow useful for people to know what is going on.
Yeah.
And this is first thing. Second, we donate from everything we have, like t-shirts and books, to Ukraine. I came to this tour literally from Kiev. And I was just buying some equipment for Dnipro Hospital and for one of the units. It's a small impact, but we're people, you know? And I think it should be like super clear that all of us are humans. What we can do, it's a human gesture. And understand that each of us have responsibility of what is going on.
Mm-hmm. What can we do here in the Netherlands as non-Russians?
For what?
To topple the regime in Russia, to make it clear.
I would recommend to build a strong army for your own protection. This is my opinion, and I think you already do a lot, like, for us too, for protection of your country. I mean, I'm so kind of sometimes surprised how the short memory is. Like, people literally do not remember what was going on 5 years ago. Yep. And I think this is very naive to think that Putin's regime doesn't have the goal to influence Europe anymore. They do. And they are friends with AfD, for example, in Germany. And you see how they're growing. The Austria is the same. It's not an illusion. It's people voting for them. It's somehow countries are changing, you know? So, like this. And I think many, many people, I remember the last anti-war demonstration in 2014, which was organized by Nemtsov, who was killed next year. People did not believe that this is the war. I mean, they were looking around. There is a peace, you know, cars are passing by, people are walking, people are drinking Aperol Spritz. What war? You can turn off the phone and no war anymore. So, and this is an illusion. I was speaking with Ukrainian soldiers now. These people were normal people. They were like, they were not professional soldiers, not ultra patriots. My favorite person, he was a truck driver. He was delivering furniture from Kiev to Belgium. That was his work. 24 February, he did a U-turn, came back to Kiev, and signed for territory defense. 3 years without rotation. Super kind. I mean, rarely super kind and professional man. You can just, we were speaking for 5 hours, 2 days, two evenings.
So did you say that the fate of Russia, your Russia, the country you love, is in the hands of the Ukrainians?
I don't think so. I think Ukrainians are fighting for their country. And they are fighting for survival. To not have this export of gulag to their territory.
Mm-hmm. But let's imagine that the Ukrainians will stay the course and are able to defend their country. Will that affect also the future of Russia?
It depends how. I mean, definitely yes. If Putin will lose the war in front of the world, definitely it will affect the regime. Yes. But it doesn't mean that... It's very hard to imagine, you know, now. Knowing, like, the situation, it's very hard.
Do you think you will ever go back again to Russia?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I want to. I want to.
And what's your hope for the future of Russia? Do you ever see a democratic Russian Russia?
You can easily Google on YouTube the archives from 90s.
Yes.
So FSB, the security service, which are actually holding the country, they are proud of their legacy. They are proud that KGB were before them, NKVD before them, and the first person like who founded Cheka, the first organ of Red Terror, Felix Dzerzhinsky. There was a huge monument in the center of Moscow of Dzerzhinsky. So in the 90s, when the Soviet Union collapsed, there was the deconstruction of this monument. Look to the photos, how many people are there.
Mm-hmm.
It's millions, millions of Russians. So there were millions who wanted freedom and the change, and there was a small group with resentment of giving everything back. And now this rhetoric of this small group is used by Putin's regime every day, repeated from the state TV, which is controlled by Kremlin. It's not so many of them. It's not so many of people who like... It's not Hitler's Germany.
How many would you say are there in charge in Putin's regime? The cloud.
You mean who believe?
Well, the cloud that's around Putin and governing the country. How many would that be?
You mean how many people support Putin.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, war censorship, atmosphere of fear. You cannot have objective picture.
No.
Kill him, and you will see how many people will go to the funeral.
But if we kill him, would there be a new Putin? Would it change anything?
It will be something. I mean, it's a personal dictatorship. It's very concentrated on his person. And definitely there are, I mean, at least war criminals. And they're like corrupted murderers. And definitely there is a gang who are doing horrible things. But there is a person who created this situation, who created this mechanism. And this is him.
So without him, maybe one day we will see a free Russia?
It depends on what do you mean by freedom, you know? Just say freedom and take it out from the history. What is happening right now should be reflected. What happened before in Soviet Union should be reflected. Otherwise, in the future, you will have the same picture that you had in the past. And it doesn't matter which word you will use for that. It will be the same.
So Russia will always be Russia, in a sense.
I mean, Russia is different. We are also Russians. I think this regime, I hope we will all see the end of this regime. But nobody knows what will happen after.
No. Well, let's hope that we will live to see the end of what's happening now. Which brings me to the next topic. It's time for the Station Kiev turntable, where we take you on a musical journey throughout Eastern Europe. Because the region is not only known for political unrest and protest, but also for its very rich cultural heritage, its musical heritage, which, as we've seen in this episode, may go hand in hand. You are the personification of that. So I'll ask you, Hubert, what's your pick of music and why?
Boris Grebenchikov.
Really?
Really?
Okay.
Train in Fire.
Okay.
A song about Russia during wartime, with the main sentence, we have a fight for already 75 years, and only now we understood that we are not fighting the enemy, but ourselves.
Do we have a short clip of that? Yes, we do. Okay, let's have a look and listen.
Этот поезд в огне, и нам не на что больше жать. Этот поезд в огне, и нам некуда больше бежать. Эта земля была нашей, пока мы не увязли в борьбе. Она умрет, если будет ничьей, пора вернуть эту землю себе.
Do you like it, Maria?
I think they need translation.
Yes, well, they did. Give us the translation.
That the translation is this train is on fire and we don't have anything to push in. This train is on fire and we have no place to run in, to run from. This land been ours before the moment when it was kind of stuck in the constant fight. This land will die if we will not give it back to us.
Okay.
Okay, I'm probably not the best translator.
It gives us an idea about what's going on. What song did you bring to the turntable?
Oi.
Oi.
Now.
Yes.
Russian.
Or Eastern European, Ukrainian.
If we talk about that time, which you remember, we can listen Perimen, which was the hymn.
Fikmachoy.
Yeah, that was the hymn of Perestroika. And there was a hymn of Russian protests as well. The 2012 and I think 2019, also it's a main soundtrack of these protests. Кино, перемен, change.
I also chose to have picked a song. Not very original, but I really like it. It's Kalush Orchestra. Actually, I met them a month before the Eurovision Song Festival. They're from Ukraine, 2022. And it was just 2 months after the war, and they were touring Europe, and everybody thought they were going to win the Song Festival because there was so much solidarity already at the time, at the beginning of the war. And so their song was Stefania. I think we have a short clip, right? Well, it's a happy song to finish, maybe a little bit sad conversation, but it does give us hope. Dit was Station Kiev, de Oost-Europa-podcast van kennisplatform Raam en het Haagse College. Kennisplatform Raam draait op uw steun, dus als u deze podcast waardeert, overweeg dan om een donatie te doen via de link in de show notes en vergeet ons geen sterren te geven.
En laat ons ook weten wat jullie ervan vinden door jullie comments op Spotify achter te laten of ons anderszins te berichten, want wij zijn heel benieuwd naar jullie reacties en we willen ervan leren.
Ja, thank you very much, Maria, for being here. Bedankt voor het luisteren. Credits voor de redactie. Freek Ewels en Annelies Hoele en producer Anneke van Hees. Tot de volgende keer of in het Oekraïns, Hubert.
Ik geloof het. Papachin, ja.